Welcome back to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. With me in the studio today, Oz Griebel. And joining us in a moment will be Professor Fred Karstensen. But we're talking about how to fix Connecticut, specifically in this segment, the economy. We're going to play some clips for you right now. And we're going to start it off with Republican candidate Bob Stefanowski. His plan, what he said, was to fix the state's economic crisis was economic growth. And he would make that happen by getting rid of the personal income tax over 8 years, cutting the corporate tax rate. And then he said not dipping into the transportation fund to help pay down the deficit. Now, during the final debate, all of the candidates were asked this question. How would you resolve the state's financial crisis without destroying Connecticut's quality of life? And this is how Stefanowski responded.
I would say there's a couple of buckets here. I think one is privatization. Look at the Department of Motor Vehicles. They spent $25 million on their computer systems 2 years ago. Anybody getting faster service in the DMV these days? I'm certainly not. What does Ned wants to do? He wants to go in and spend another $20 million to try it again. There's $20 million right off the top. Let's take the good employees from the DMV. Let's bring in the private sector. Let's run it like a business for a profit. Number two. Let's look at the $10 million that Dan Mulway wants to spend on a toll study that we've already voted down. They throw these numbers around like they're immaterial. $10 million here, $20 million here. It starts to add up. Let's look at the busway from New Britain to Hartford. $600 million for a nine-mile bus route, $1,000 per inch.
Now, I spoke with Governor-elect Ned Lamont, and I asked him if he would raise or impose a new tax or tolls to pay for the budget deficit, and here's what he said.
We are not going to raise the income tax, but I also can't tell you we're going to eliminate it, because I think that is a false promise. And when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. And first thing I got to do is get to an honestly balanced budget that doesn't borrow from the future, but invest in the future. So no increase in the income tax, period.
Joining us on the phone now on The Full Story is Professor Fred Karstensen. The professor is professor of finance and economics at UConn, and he's the director of the Connecticut Center for Economic Analysis. Professor Karstensen, thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Happy to join you.
You've been listening to the program. What do you think of all these proposals?
Well, the striking thing is that, except for one comment from Oz, a lot of them are irrelevant. I mean, Oz hit it on the button that one of our problems is that we squandered most of a $5 billion surplus earlier on. But other than that, we don't even get the context right. Connecticut's economy from 1997 to 2007, measured even in a conventional way without looking at it on a per capita basis, was among the best economies in the country. We grew 3% in real terms for 10 years. No other state very few others. But if you do it on a per capita basis, we had almost no job creation. And we had very low population growth. It turns out Connecticut had the strongest growing economy in the nation, 1997 to 2007, while we had the income tax. So, you know, there's simply no case to be made that the income tax is somehow the explanation. And this idea of 30 years of stagnation looking at job growth is not the real economy. You need to look at the real economy. Yes, we need job growth, but we would like to have quality job growth. Now, let's talk about what's happened over the last 10 years. Since 2008, Connecticut's economy has been shrinking every single year except for 2019. It started under Governor Rell, very dramatic contraction. In 4 years, we lost 75% of our non-durable manufacturing. It's like nobody paid attention. You cannot find a single headline during that period that talks about this. Now, we started creating jobs in 2010, but they were low-quality jobs. We were losing jobs that paid $25,000 to $30,000 a year more than the jobs we were creating. So even as we created jobs for most of the last 8 years, the economy was contracting. Our real economy is now smaller than it was in 2004. Now, at the same time, our immediate neighbors, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, even Rhode Island, and New York all of which have reasonably high tax burdens, all of whom have income taxes, have in fact been growing very nicely. And they are all now well above their previous peak in both employment and, critically, in real output from 2008. So Connecticut is an anomaly. Connecticut doesn't look like similar states that have similar tax burdens and so on. We went from best to worst. For one decade, we were the best in the nation, and then for the following decade, we were the worst. So obviously, there's something going on here that we have not really sorted out and haven't really gotten arms around. Now, I can point to some of the reasons that I think that that dynamic happened. But a lot of this discussion, you know, Stefanowski has pointed to some things that may be wasteful expenditure. Okay, you know, we shouldn't do those things. We ought to clean that up. Cleaning that up is not going to change the dynamic. Eliminating the income tax is not going to change the dynamic. There's just no way to connect the kinds of things that people have talked about to what actually has happened. So you have to start with an understanding of what actually has happened in Connecticut over the last 20, 25 years.
Okay, so if Ned Lamont is listening to this program, what would you and Oz Griebel tell him to do that he needs to do first to get this going in the right direction?
Well, there are at least three things that I would point to. Number one, Connecticut is notorious for its failure to secure federal funding. We are among the poorest states in the country in terms of securing federal funding to which we're entitled or to for which we could compete. My estimates are we probably have been losing over $1 billion a year in funding from the government. States, especially ironically red states, work very hard to get the money that the federal government makes available to states. Connecticut has not made that effort. In fact, there's a 2012 report by the legislative committee called Investigation and Review, now abolished, unfortunately, which points exactly this out and says Connecticut needs a coordinated effort to get federal funds. It recommended creation of a special office that would do this to the legislature. This was ignored. Nothing was done.
Professor, I'm sorry. We only have 10 minutes left in the segment. So what is the number two that you would do?
So number one, much better. That would help a lot with the budget deficit. Number two, we should make a concerted effort to bring the institutions of higher education together in a coordinated way, the way we did in an extraordinarily successful effort on stem cell research. UConn, Yale, Wesleyan, University of New Haven, others that have capacity to work. If we bring these together, we could be far more successful in biomedical technology and growth, especially with the presence of Jackson Labs. In aerospace engineering, we're very, very strong in aerospace, but we don't have the higher education component to link to that we should have. And the last one of the three sectors would be data analytics, information technologies. And then the third element, and this switches back to state policy, the single most powerful tool we have in the state of Connecticut to drive economic growth are what are called stranded tax credits. These are tax credits that companies have earned against state income tax, primarily for investments in R&D. But then the state has restricted their ability to use them. Now, we did an analysis, when I say see, the Center for Economic Analysis, that shows that the state does not lose a dime of net revenue if it permits companies to cash in these stranded tax credits to help fund capital projects, not to subsidize jobs. No, to help do things like we did with United Technologies, build a world research headquarters in East Hartford. That has anchored them here for a generation. We did this with Jackson Labs. We gave them a building. It anchors them here. This is what you do to get companies to stay here, is you give them facilities that they can't take with them, that are unique to their needs. And $1 billion in stranded tax credits, on our analysis, could generate up to 40,000 permanent jobs in the state of Connecticut. The legislature finally did a tiny little step on this, permitting DECD, Department of Economic Community Development, to use up to $50 million in aggregate. Now, that's pathetic. Excuse me. $50 million is still simply, that is less than you would need to spend on, you know, any significant project. The JAC Lab is $200 million. The World Research Headquarters for United Technologies is $250 million. You know, it's not a serious effort. And we could do a lot to bend the curve going forward in terms of economic growth. And that is the core issue, is how are we going to restore economic growth?
Oz Griebel, Ned Lamont is listening to the program. What do you tell him?
First of all, hire Fred Carstensen. That's the first thing you do, and bring him into the cabinet. Good to talk with you, Fred. Secondly, the governor has to add the fourth thing to what I agree with everything that Fred said. But I think the governor's also got to be a salesperson. I made the comment earlier that we've got a crisis of confidence in this state. If the governor's not going out and visiting regularly major employers, businesses, hospitals, not-for-profits, putting his or her arm around them and saying, we love you, we appreciate you being here, we appreciate the jobs you have here, we appreciate the taxes that you and your employees are paying, we appreciate the investments you make in your facilities and your equipment and your R&D. If the governor's not doing that, and the governor of Connecticut's not doing it, there are 49 other governors that are doing it every day of the week. I mean, part of being an effective leader is being an effective salesperson, an effective marketer, getting people to believe in you. And the things that Fred said, I think, are the specifics. But if you're not out having regular conversations, and I don't mean just big businesses, by the way, not just the GEs of the world, all the privately held companies that can move across the border into Massachusetts, or move a little farther up into New Hampshire, or move farther away into South Carolina, if we're not making the effort to listen to them, see what we can do on a one-off basis, not with throwing money at them. I mean, the strand of tax credits, I agree 100% with Fred on, but not the First Five program and all these other things we've been at. But rather, are there mandates we could eliminate or reduce? Are there easier ways we could help you with complying with regulations? Are there things that we could do to help with the workforce development pipeline? Those are the things that we need to do on a regular basis. Sitting up in the Capitol in the corner office 365 days of the year ain't moving anything unless you're in the constant sales mode.
Professor, would you say, or some people have said, that Connecticut for the last number of years has not been a business-friendly environment?
Well, it's yes and no. Catherine Smith, Commissioner of Community, has been extremely responsive, I think, at the individual level when she knows about a company that is thinking about leaving or has an issue. But we have not, at the same time, really generated general policies. We haven't said, these are the criteria. If you satisfy these criteria, you qualify. We have a long history, and again, there's a 1910 study that was done by Investigations and Review that pointed out that Connecticut's economic development strategy was very peculiar. It was transactional. It wasn't creating systematic policies. So Connecticut is a state where you have to go in and negotiate everything. You can't say, okay, we qualify, therefore we're going to get it. And I agree absolutely with Oz on the importance of hands-on leadership by the governor. The only reason that the stem cell, that's the only initiative where we've had coordination and collaboration among our institutions of higher education, and that was because REL led the effort. She said, we're going to put $100 million into this, $10 million a year. You've got to create a framework. We created an NSF-like peer review structure. It worked extraordinarily well, but it was gubernatorial leadership that did it. And Oz is absolutely right. Other states, I know somebody here in Connecticut who was looking for a place for his IT company. He was having a very hard time getting attention here in Connecticut. He called the governor's office in Texas, not to talk to the governor, but simply, to whom do I talk? Literally, the governor called him back personally, Governor Perry. And the following day, the head of his economic development agency called him back. And they just talked about, what would be done on worker training, what kind of incentives were available, and so on. You do need that kind of very responsive effort. And there are lots of models out there. We should be alert to best practice in Virginia, in Minnesota, in Oregon, in Colorado. There are lots of other states that are doing some very, very smart approaches. and we should be attentive to that. And it's one of the things I've recommended to the Commission on Fiscal Stability is that the legislature should start every session, certainly the long session, with an analysis of both how we're performing longitudinally and comparatively, but we also ought to be talking about what is best practice in other states. We tend to be very parochial in our attitude. We tend not to pay attention to what our competitors are doing. That's not a formula for success.
We have about 3 minutes left in this segment. I know then you have to go, Professor, but I was at the gym this morning, and a friend of mine walked up to me out of the blue, and he says, I hope Ned knows what he's doing, because I don't think Connecticut can be saved at this point. Which to me was a depressing way to start the day. Do you think Connecticut can be saved?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I ran. I mean, here's a short answer I'll give you, and so that Fred has a chance to respond. The great privilege of campaigning is that you know intellectually how smart this state is, how many smart people are in this state. You get to internalize it by going up to Putnam, by going to Torrington, by going to New London, by going to Stanford. You realize how rich this state is, how broad and deep it is in intellectual talent. And what you really get more than anything is how many people care about Connecticut. Yes, we have an out-migration problem. There's no question about that. It's serious. But not everybody is leaving. The number of people who are committed to this state, who are passionate about this state, who want to put Connecticut back up into national preeminence so their kids and grandchildren and strangers want to come here, you do not underestimate that. It is the single biggest asset we have. And with the right leadership along the lines we're talking about here, it'll be reinvigorated.
Professor, I'm going to give you the last word on this segment for about a minute and a half. Can it be saved?
Well, no pressure, though.
No, we do
offer extraordinary quality of life along a lot of metrics, and in fact we have the largest number of people who live in Connecticut but work out of state proportionally of any state in the country, which is one of our problems because they pay their income tax in New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Massachusetts instead of in Connecticut. But we have lots of very, very good assets, and when I said, you know, let's coordinate it among our higher education institutions in three specific areas, that was, you know, let's exploit our assets. We have not done a good job of, as a whole, we have tended to be less than the sum of the parts, is the old sort of commentary on that. And we actually have some very encouraging developments in one particular area, which is in the IT area. In New Britain, we're finally developing what is potentially going to be the largest data center in the Northeast. We've been very, very weak in data centers, which are part of the modern big data economy. There's a wonderful capacity there. It's based on a power supply project and fuel cells. The fuel cells are all being made in Connecticut and in Windsor.
Professor, I have to hold you there because we're just about out of time. But I want to thank you, and I hope you come back and visit with us.
Okay, will do.
Professor Fred Carstensen from UConn, Oz Griebel's in the studio, and you are listening to The Full Story.